welcome back to a new episode of Good Friends and Great Adventures, the International Ocean Film Tour Stories podcast. I'm your host today, Max von Nitsch, and I got the honor to talk to Melissa Kegler, who has been part of the International Ocean Film Tour Volume 10 with her movie Ice Mermaid. In her movie, she attempts to break the US female record on the longest distance swimming in ice cold water. You may ask how cold the water was, how she got started, and which risk she took to get where she is. We are also going to answer the question, which goal comes after the goal? And in case you don't already know, the International Ocean Film Tour is the film event for everyone who loves the ocean. Unique documentaries on a big screen, stories of people who inspire, but also remind us that we must protect the world in which we live in. Please find all the information in the show notes. Let's dive right in. This is me and Melissa. Welcome, Melissa. So happy to have you here on the show.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here today.
So how are you?
I'm good. So it is going to be sunny today in Seattle, which is always a treat for the fall and going into the colder weather, because you get that brisk air in the morning, which is always kind of fun because it gets the fog up in the morning over the water for swimming, which is some of my favorite times too.
I can imagine. And before we dive deeper in, we always start the podcast with the question, what are you doing?
What are I doing? Well, that's a great question. I actually just came back yesterday from a mini swimcation, as I like to call it. I was up in my favorite nice place in Washington, up in the Port Angeles area on the Strait of Juan de Fuca. And it's just so serene and rugged and wild up there, but the wind was really nice, so made a quick dash up there to get some swimming in. It's a really beautiful beach that's, I would say, fairly protected from the wind, but there's a lot of stand-up paddleboarders, people that are learning to surf, and it's kind of fun just going and hanging out there with everybody on the water and seeing the wildlife and meeting new people.
That sounds beautiful. And I like the little swimcation
word.
I never heard that. That's really cool. That's
not nice. A vacation. I have a very difficult time going on, I would say, standard vacations where I don't at least have the opportunity to get in the water in some capacity. So for me, they're always swimcations.
And when you say in the water, does it have to be cold, or would be warm water fun too?
Nope, it can be anything. So I usually like to take one tropical vacation a year, because I do love the cold water, but sometimes you just want to be warm. And so I like taking one tropical vacation this year. So I just planned my vacation for early January. So I'll be going over to Hawaii. I haven't been to Hawaii for a few years.
Oh, that's so cool. So something really great to look forward to.
Yes.
For all the listeners out there who have not heard of you, would you be so kind and introduce yourself again and tell us where you are at the moment?
Absolutely. So my name is Melissa Kegler, and I am an ice swimmer, marathon swimmer, open water swimmer that specializes in cold water swimming. Cold water is, you know, really, really my love and my passion, and I feel like you get to experience a lot more things with the cold water that you don't necessarily get to in the warm water. It also gives you more opportunities to swim in various locations. But I love everything water related, and I'm located out of Seattle, Washington.
That's beautiful. And we're going to dive in that a little bit more. And the podcast is called Good Friends and Great Adventures. And you are a good friend since this year's show, or last year's show, Volume 10, where we screened the brilliant movie Ice Mermaid. Could you give us a quick breakdown on what happens in the movie?
The Ice Mermaid is really about, it's more than just the swim itself, which was my goal to achieve the U.S. Distance record for ice swimming. My swim was 2.2 kilometers in 3.9 degrees Celsius water. It went up to 4.1 by the time I was done, so that was nice to have it go up in temperature. But when I say that it was a lot more than just the swim, it's, and I think a lot of viewers for the film really get the sense of it's, really three main things I love so much about the film is one, of course, the community and my friends, because there's just a whole bunch of people, diverse backgrounds, ages, occupational positions, and just beliefs, and none of that matters in the water. We love our connection, and we love each other through the joy of water and the joy of being with each other and feeling what the water gives us. It's almost like our, you know, our Sunday church service in a, in a way, is just that joy of the water. The other two big aspects for me are my connection with nature and my emotional connection with the sea and the water. I think the film does a great job highlighting one of my favorite things about the water is the animals, especially my seals and just all the aquatic wildlife. And then the third thing is I remember the first time I watched it back, I was, the rough cut of the film, I was almost in tears because of how beautiful it showcases Washington. And I just kind of looked at it thinking, wow, I live here and I get to swim here. And I didn't really realize how many different places I traveled to in my journey of chasing the cold in order to prepare myself for the ice swim. But just looking back at those, it was just a resounding feeling of, I'm so thankful for everything right now at this point in time in my life. I just love it.
Yeah, it came out so, so, so beautiful and really inspiring. And the thing I was wondering, when you say you attempt the record, and I'm not sure if that's part of the movie, could you let us know what the rules are for the attempt? Because it's 2.0 kilometers, and it's obviously a cold water situation, but what's the level of the temperature that declares it as a cold water swim? Is there a range?
Yes. So all ice swims, if you want to do an ice swim according to the rules of the governing body of the International Ice Swimming Association, IISA or ISA, it's a pretty robust set of rules. And I think that's something that really attracts me to not only ice swimming, but organized marathon swimming as well, is following the rules. So I'm a compliance specialist by day. And so for me, I've spent my entire career making sure people follow the rules. So for me, following rules comes natural. But I also know the rigor and challenge to really do things by the rules. So there's a long list of rules, but the biggest one is the water temperature. And a lot of people ask, you know, that same question is, how cold does it have to be? And the maximum temperature you can have is 5 degrees Celsius. So all the swims have to be 5 degrees or below. Obviously, there's an advantage to hitting that sweet spot right around that 4.5 to 5 degrees Celsius to give yourself the best chance. I haven't been able to find that yet. So all my ice swims have unfortunately been around 4 degrees or lower. And then when you go low, well, it can't be, it's also more cold, but, I would love to do an ice swim someday where I do hit that 5 degree mark, where I can see what it feels like to be warmer, I guess, longer. I don't know, but it's 5 degrees is really the big rule. Then there's a whole bunch of other rules, but the temperature is the biggest one. Cause if it's not cold enough, it doesn't count.
And you just said it just... Yes, also too, wondering how it might feel. Do you feel the difference between like 4 and 3 degrees after a certain time? Because I can't imagine that your body to a certain point just will be numb.
Yes, it does go numb. So I think for me, once the water hits, I would say probably 8 degrees Celsius, it's really interesting because you can feel the difference, at least mentally. I think I can feel the difference between 8 and 7.5 and 7, because you get so attuned to the different changes in temperature as it drops. Once it gets to a certain temperature, which, you know, I think we'll talk about later in some of my up and coming goals, it really becomes a vacuum of space. And it's really weird to describe, but you go in the water. And when I say really cold, you know, 2 degrees and below, it becomes this vacuum of space where you can tell you're going into something. You can feel that your body is being enveloped by a different form of matter, but you can't tell what it is. So it's a really weird feeling at those temperatures. And then between 3 and 5, it just hurts when you get in. I mean, there's no two ways around it. It hurts getting in. And then you can feel your body going numb, I would say fairly quickly after you get in, especially when you get all the water around your head, and how it affects your brain. So you can feel yourself go numb. And then after a while, it's almost like you're kind of getting warm because you can't feel it. And that's when I know hypothermia is setting in, because the first sign of hypothermia is when you start to feel warm again. The challenge with ice swimming is when you start to feel warm, you know you're getting hypothermia, but you're not done. You got to figure out a way to finish, or at least make that choice if you're going to continue to finish.
Yeah, I can imagine that this can be a very, very difficult place when you're also trying to set a record. You got your mind on that goal, and I'm not sure how is your brain working to full capacity, or is it like at some point you're not even sure if you can take the right decision because you've been just in the cold for too long?
That's an interesting question, because I can tell, at least with myself, because I've intentionally put myself in many situations where I'm intending to become hypothermic. I always say ice swimming is this crazy person's self-induced hypothermic sport that we do, and for some reason we like it. But as you swim, I can tell that my brain function reduces and my head gets kind of foggy, and I know I'm not thinking straight. And, you know, I'll start just to think of weird things. Usually food is my number one weird thing, where I start to think about, you know, randomly it's, oh, I want a pizza, or I'll think about, you know, a type of sandwich I want to eat, or a donut. I don't know. Something pops in my head food related, but for me, I know that happens to me. And the biggest challenge, you know, is going through is trying to keep yourself mentally engaged. Because I think when you start to check out and you don't pay attention to your stroke or your body, or you don't have a focal point with your swimming. I don't know this for sure. This is just my own hypothesis. But I think you could probably go into hypothermia a lot quicker, which is you know, also not safe. I do plan for it, though, in the sense that I have safety, you know, I have my safety kayakers or paddle boarders around me. And then I also give, as a part of my personal safety procedures, I tell my crew, who monitors lots of things like my speech comprehension to questions, but mainly my stroke count, where if my stroke count drops below a certain degree, that you call the swim and you end it and you'll pull me out no matter what. And that's just kind of not just my commitment to myself and my safety, but I also think it's really hard on your crew, because you think about the people that are watching you and, you know, swimming. And I think a lot of activities, when you're putting yourself in a really dangerous situation, can be pretty selfish in many ways. And that you are essentially asking your friends to watch you hurt yourself to the point where, I mean, there is a possibility you could die. It's very, you know, I don't know of anyone that's died from ice swimming, but the possibility exists. So that's really heavy on your crew and your family and friends. So it's my commitment to my personal safety, but also my commitment to my friends. I don't want to put myself in a position where they have to make a life-saving call for me, because I don't know what I would do in that position for a friend. I mean, it would be really hard, because you want your friend to succeed, but you also want them to live to swim another day. And So things like that is being really aware innately of where my head is at, putting in safety precautions so that that choice doesn't have to be made is really my number one goal for any ice swim.
Yeah, there's two things coming to my mind when you say your friends have to make the decision or have to take the decision for you, and they also would be watching you if in case something would happen. I had this there. I'm not sure if you've seen the movie Free Solo with Alex Honnold.
Yes.
And he talks about the situation where he's considering the fact, like, am I really in the position to ask my friends film me to free solo El Capitan? Because if something goes wrong, obviously they do not have to make any call, but they would see what could happen. Mm-hmm. And do I want to put them in the situation? And the second thing is, I did my diving license, if you say it like this.
Okay.
And then if you go beyond the open water and it goes into deeper water, I'm not sure what the English word is, there's the term of like depth sickness, where your brain also gets foggy, and the highest risk is that you don't really realize what's happening around you. So you go down and out of a sudden, I had my uncle experience this, and he told me how he got like rescued. And he was like, yeah, I was just like following that shark, and it went deeper and deeper and deeper. And he was like, everything started to be like funny. Maybe, as you said, you suddenly start thinking about a donut. So he just went down and thought, oh, that's funny. Look at the shark. And then you realize, oh, don't realize when somebody pulls you and tries to save you. And I can imagine that this is something that, as you said, will be like, or can be the same.
Mm-hmm. But it's really scary because I've heard stories from so many ice swimmers where the biggest issue they have in their swim is they don't remember finishing. And I remember the first time somebody told me that, and I thought, what do you mean you don't remember finishing the swim? And there's a period of time when, you know, your body goes into life-saving mode when you are getting hypothermic, where, I mean, the body is so smart. It's really fascinating, but it shuts off your brain. And I remember I had to sit down and really think about, do I want to go for this goal I have? Because one, if you achieve a goal, you kind of want to remember the fact that you're achieving it. I mean, selfishly, you want to know that you crossed the finish line.
Yeah.
But then also, you know, I don't know that there's been any longer term studies done on the effects of brain damage as it results to swimming. I mean, I guess you could look at the studies on hypothermia and brain damage, but I just haven't. But that's something I thought about as well. If my brain isn't functioning, that's you know, technically causing some level of brain damage. And I kind of joke with people, well, maybe that's why we like cold swimming so much, is you know, it makes us, yeah, it makes us crazy. But at the same time, you know, I love my job, and I have a very, you know, demanding job that I really enjoy. And I think about the effects of, well, what if I couldn't do my job? And what if I couldn't do the other things I enjoy? And I love organizing my travel swimcations. And what if I couldn't organize as efficiently? So there's all these different things that I worry about with risk to hypothermia, and not just the brain, but for physical limitations like nerve damage in the fingers and toes. And, you know, obviously the more serious things like cardiac issues and, you know, what if something really bad happened? But yeah, it's the brain is a funny thing. And I get really nervous because you think what drives a person to put themselves in a state where they know their brain's not going to be functioning. And when I think about that, I think, this is nuts. I mean, this is, you know, why are we doing this?
No logical explanation.
And I, you know, I think about that question because I get asked that question all the time. Why do you do this? And I don't know. I mean, I can't tell you why. Yeah, I can't tell people why I like certain things. I think you just do. And that has to be, I mean, I'm sure there's some deeper meaning, but I haven't found it just yet. I mean, I just like it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's good enough, I guess. And we obviously spoke a bit about the movie and the great adventure. Your ice swimming obviously started way before the filming, I guess. So I want to dive into that journey and your relationship with the ice cold water. And I'm wondering, when was the first time you realized, okay, I'm torn to cold water? And was water always something that was around you, that you were drawn into naturally from a very young age on?
Yes. Yes. I've always been around water, you know, since I grew up. I'm originally from Michigan, and Michigan is, it was a great place to live because there is so much water. It's technically Michigan is a peninsula. There's the upper and lower peninsula. So we're surrounded by really big lakes that are, you know, they're very, very big. So they look like, you know, oceans across them. You can't tell the difference, you know, between the ocean and the lakes. But then we have tons of lakes within the state. So I grew up in the water at a very young age. My mom's family grew up on a lake. And so every time we went to my grandparents' house, we went to the beach by the lake. And, you know, we went looking for frogs and clams and all that fun stuff that, you know, kids do. And the big swim was jumping off the dock and swimming to the beach, which was 100 meters, you know, but that was really big when we were little. And so I think I've always enjoyed the water, but I didn't really, I didn't know about open water swimming as a sport. And I didn't know that you could survive in the cold water, because I think you're taught, well, the water freezes in Michigan. But I wasn't exposed to the ocean until much later in life when I moved to the West Coast, probably in my mid to late 20s, I think. And when I came out to the West Coast, it was totally different. And the water was cold. I mean, the water on the East Coast is generally warm in the summer. And so I expected the same thing to happen out here. And it was totally different, because the water, the warmest it gets here in the summer is probably, we'll say conservatively, 17 degrees. At the absolute, you know, summer peak in the Puget Sound, which is still really cold. And so the water, I came out here in, I remember coming down the hill that day, going to Alki Beach, which is my favorite beach, for the first time. And the sun was out and the sky was blue, and Alki Beach faces westward. And there's the Olympic mountain range in the distance. And so I'm coming down this hill, the water sparkling, glistening in the sun. There's snow-capped mountains in the background. It was in November. And even before I got in the water, I just thought, this is the most amazing thing I've seen in my life. I mean, it was just so beautiful, because it was this big wilderness place right here in the city, which was really difficult to wrap my mind around as well. And then I remember getting in, and it was so cold. I had never experienced anything like it before. It was so cold. But you get out, and I think that's why when you talk about the plunging community, there's a lot of plungers that feel that same way. You have this rush of energy, and you just feel good. And that was really my first experience into cold water. And it grew from there. And Alki is such a great place because it's always cold. I started swimming through the winter, and then after I did my first ice mile several years later, it was the coldest water I'd ever been in. And it was 3.7 degrees was the swim that day. And I remember getting out thinking, I mean, my brain wasn't working, so I was half delirious too, but I remember getting out just thinking, I love this and I want to do it again. And I think if I had to pick a moment, that would probably be the moment where I realized I love really cold water, because it was just, normally you don't get out of an ice swim and think, I want to do it again.
Yeah, yeah.
And then people think, oh, she's acting crazy. You know, she's not thinking clearly. She has hypothermia. You know, she doesn't really mean it. But I did. And literally that same day I started thinking about I wonder if I could swim longer. I wonder if I could swim further. What does ice swimming look like for me? So that was a really big moment in my life, was to finish that first ice mile and really experience this new thing and this new activity that has really pivoted my swim career.
It's so nice that you can all like narrow it down to like that one specific moment. And for me, I'm a surfer. I surf. I live on the southwest coast of France. So sometimes the water gets colder, maybe like 11 or 12 degrees. But I remember when I lived in Germany and COVID hit and everything was too much and the city felt super small. I was like, okay, we're getting into winter. I want to do something to clear my mind. So I started taking cold showers and I feel like a 16 degree cold shower felt ice cold. And for me, it felt like a preparation, little did I know. And then when the lake where we live completely or almost completely froze, I went there, put a little hole in the ice, put my beanie on. So I was in swim shorts, but I wore a beanie because I didn't plan to dip my hat. The water had 2 degrees at that point. I only went in and I think on the first day, I made it for like maybe 45 seconds and I tried to breathe slow. I watched all the videos from Wim Hof to get my breathing going so that I don't start breathing super hectically. And I felt like when I went out, everything got warm. I loved the feeling. It cleared my mind so much. But I also felt like the showers, like the cold showers, they did nothing. Because it's just like,
yep.
I felt like you can't really prepare for this. And I was wondering, did you prepare for this?
So my first ice mile, very similar experience with your showers. My first ice mile, I didn't know what I was doing. And because Seattle gets so cold in the winter, our water temperature here drops to probably 7.
Yeah.
Between 6 and 7 in the winter. So by swimming year round, you're kind of already training for it. And at that time, I wasn't going into the mountains yet. But I have a mentor here that I was who had done an ice mile before. And I was asking them, you know, what do you do? And they said the same thing, cold showers. So I was doing the cold showers and then I was going into the lake and just sitting, not moving so I could get cold and then going back to the shower. And I thought at that point in time that was helping prepare me. And this was before ice baths were really a thing. So that wasn't really an option. And then after I swam my first ice mile, I thought, I don't think those cold showers did anything.
So I'm happy you say that.
The second one, I never did cold showers again because I just kind of thought, well, I don't think I really want to do cold showers anymore because they aren't cold enough. First of all, they actually feel warm after you're super cold. And I thought, well, I really like my warm showers too because I like the feeling of being warm, you know, and showers are a great way to get warm. So I stopped cold showers completely. And a lot of people are surprised by that, but I don't think they do anything. I do the ice baths occasionally, but there's probably going to be some people that get mad I say this, but I actually don't think the ice baths do a lot either for cold swimming because when you think about ice baths, you're usually sitting in a bundle and your armpits aren't exposed to the cold, which really makes your body lose heat really quick. And usually you're sitting, your legs are tight together. So your like more sensitive areas between your legs get really cold really quick and you lose a lot of heat that way. But the biggest thing is your head's not in the water. And I think the cold water, when it hits your head and hits your facial muscles and hits your brain, I think that your body just completely changes its reaction to the cold. Because I've done the cold baths really, really religiously. And I don't really think they helped too much. Now, that being said, I also think it has to do with the fact that the water here in Seattle is really cold, because there's not much difference, to be honest, between the ice baths and going hiking into the mountains to hit some of the alpine lakes. I think if you're in a location like Florida, where it's really hot all year round, or I don't know, some warmer places where they don't have access to cold water, I think the ice baths would be a lot more effective, and I think cold showers would be more effective. But I think here, because it's so cold and I'm exposed to the cold water on a regular basis, I don't think they do too much here. They feel good though.
Yeah. It does. And the thing I said about clearing my mind, is it something that happens to you too, that the second you just hit the water, all the sounds, all the loudness, all the thoughts just slowly fade away and you're just in the moment?
I would say sometimes that happens. So for me, it's a little different because I view cold water swimming and ice swimming as a training exercise for an event. So if I'm having a bad day and I go to, you know, the water to try and work it out, it's only been a few times I've actually been able to work stress out through cold water immersion. Okay. For me, I think there's a lot of people, whether you go to the gym, swim, you know, whatever your activity is you do, if they have a bad day, I hear people say all the time, they work out their stress and work out their emotions through sport. For me, it doesn't work like that because I think when I go into the water and I'm specifically training for an ice swim or a marathon swim and I'm already stressed out, it's like stress on more stress because now I'm focused on, okay, I got to get this many yards in. I have to stay in this long. I have to do this. I have to do that. And it's just an accumulation of things. Where I do agree though, is if I do have a bad day, if I'm going in and plunging and just hanging out and having a snorkel day, or just going in to socialize and chat with other people while we're in the water, that really works well. And I feel like I can do that and I can let everything go and I can just be free in a sense. I feel like my mind doesn't have any boundaries at that point in time. And I can let everything out and not take in anything that I don't want. But that's really, you know, I have to be in a good mental mindset beforehand if I'm training. Otherwise, it's too much. And then if I really am having a bad day, I also need to get over the fact that, you know what, I'm not going to train this day. And I'm going to go in and I'm going to go in the water for me. And I'm going to go in the water for my health. And I'm going to go in the water and just have a fun day. And I think that's important, too, because I think a lot of athletes specifically forget to have fun days. And they forget why they love swimming, why they love surfing, why they love going into the mountains. And I think sometimes you just need to go in and have fun and not work out. And if you go out in the water and you never catch a wave and you're just sitting on your board the whole time, I think that's okay too. If you're having fun and you enjoy it and it's helping you in a way, I think that's really important as well, to just make sure you build in those fun days.
100%. I think sometimes you definitely have to take the seriousness away. And I constantly have to remind myself to do so, because sometimes then I get too caught up and a session, as you said, doesn't really work out. Either it's too big or too small, not what I expected. Then I go out and then I always try to get to the point where I realize that I'm still pretty damn lucky that I can go out and enjoy the ocean on a daily basis. One last thing about the ice bathing and maybe my relation is, when it's super cold and I go surfing, sometimes you have to duck dive, so you dive underneath the wave.
Mm-hmm.
I get the like a brain freeze kind of feeling.
Yeah.
So I come up and I feel like, oh, so I have a really bad headache. And I was wondering, do you have the same brain freeze effect? Because your head is more or less constantly at least half underneath the surface.
I have brain freeze every single time. And I think a lot of people think eventually you don't have it. But I know for me, there's three places on my body which are the coldest getting in. My ankles, for some reason, are super cold. And I honestly feel like my ankles are going to fall off sometimes. And it's so cold, it makes me want to throw up walking in the water. Oh. And but then you just kind of go numb a little bit and it's fine. And then right on the back of my neck, like the back of the shoulder blades and the neck gets super, super cold for me. And it's just instant like body chill where I'm just, woo, it's cold everywhere. Mm-hmm. And then my face, I get face and brain freeze every single time. And I don't know if I've gotten used to it now, used to the feeling of what that feels like, so it doesn't bother me as much. I mean, I'm definitely more acclimated to the cold, but I just try to focus on, okay, I'm going to keep my face. This isn't good advice, but I'm going to keep my face in the water as long as I can until I can't feel it anymore. And then I'll be okay. So that's my strategy, is just work through that, that initial pain. Yeah. And eventually it'll be numb. And then once it's numb, I won't be able to feel that I'm hurting. Not great advice, but I get brain freeze every time.
I mean, it's pretty similar when I'm surfing, when it's cold. After a certain point, you just be like, okay, I don't feel it anymore. So that's that's a good thing then. I want to go back to the movie just for a little bit, because you said something in the movie which shocked me. So you said you got some medical advice from the doctor, and the doctor was pretty skeptic, and he was kind of like, no, you have to do something about your body, about your weight, and if you don't do it, I don't think it's super healthy. And for me, even before, I felt like the film is so much more than just about breaking the record. It's also like a statement and empowerment to a more body positivity world. And I would like to get your thoughts on it, and also maybe how it changed from the moment the doctor told you that to just afterwards, after you just proved him wrong and showed the word, no, I am possible to do this.
Yeah, that was a really difficult time during the film, because I know I'm not a size 2. You know, I know I'm not a smaller person. I also know I'm far from the biggest person that I know. But I think as an athlete and always being, you know, a bigger athlete, I do have a lot of, you know, muscle mass under my flub tub rolls a little bit. And I've always just been heavier. And for me, it's never been a problem. And I get the advice, you know, I've gotten advice from, you know, doctors before, if I've gained weight or lost weight, whatever it is, you know, just be healthy and be careful of, you know, what you're eating, how you're exercising. But it's never been an issue, because I work very, very closely with my medical team for my marathon swims, my longer swims. And, you know, leading up to some of those big events, what more can you do as an athlete if you're working out 3 to 4 hours a day, 6 days a week, and you're not losing weight? I don't eat the healthiest. Like, I self-admit that, because I'm not going to deny myself a donut if I want a donut. But I'm also not eating donuts all day. And I think people, think when I talk about, you know, the foods I like, or they see me eating a piece of pizza, that I think sometimes people associate what somebody physically looks like and what they may see somebody eating as, oh, that person she or he is bigger, and they're bigger because they're eating pizza and donuts all day. Well, that's not a case. I mean, I like salads and vegetables and fruits too. It's just, I also like pizza, and I'm going to eat my slice of pizza or two or three. And that's okay. I think there's a really good balance between, you know, being thin or being big and maintaining your health. And I think we, especially in the ages, you know, of social media now, you just get bombarded every day with this is how you should look. But nobody's really talking about this is how you should maintain your health.
Yeah.
So that day when I went in to see the doctor, I was expecting, it was new insurance. I had recently switched jobs, so I hadn't worked with this doctor before. And I was expecting the same treatment of my previous medical care team. Yeah. And so when he looked at me and, you know, he just said, well, you're too fat to swim and you're obese. I just kind of thought, one, I can swim because 3 months ago I just finished a 21 mile swim right here in the Puget Sound in water temperature that was 11 degrees. So how can you tell me I can't swim if I just literally swam for 10 and a half hours in 11 degrees water? So one, you're wrong, but I didn't know him, so I didn't say that. And he just kept saying the words obese over and over again, which, you know, just irritated me. Yeah. And he never once asked me what I did for exercise, what types of foods I eat. He was making all these assumptions based on my weight alone. Now, from his perspective, I do understand, and there is a little bit of a controversy. From his perspective, I understand in the medical profession how weight affects people. I can't, you know, hiking is difficult for me because I'm heavier. I have to carry my weight up the mountain. I know I'm at risk for, you know, different weight related issues. I know all these things, and he did his job in providing information to me, but I feel like I should be able to make my own choices, whether I want to partake on a risky activity or not. I think I should be able to make my own choices on what I eat or not. And if I want to lose weight or if I want to gain more weight. I mean, if I don't want to be healthy, I don't have to be healthy. So that was a really difficult conversation. And it was honestly the first time in my life, him not signing the form blocked me from moving forward in my goal. And it was the first time I think somebody, not that he said no, but by him saying no, he took away my choice to choose because I didn't have any of the other options. I can't swim unless the form is completed.
Yeah.
And to have somebody take away your choice and take away your ability to do something, I mean, it was really hard. And I think about, like, with you with surfing, if you wanted to go buy a board and somebody said, no, I'm not going to sell you a board, you can go to another shop and get a different board to go surfing. But if somebody said, you can't buy a board because it looks like you have blue eyes. If they say, you can't buy a board because you have blue eyes, there's nothing you can do about that. I mean, your eyes are your eye color. Yeah. And I mean, it's just not right for somebody to do that, to take away your choice to go do something you love. So I think that was a big perspective change for me, because then it started making me think of all sorts of other things, like other people who have the choice being taken from them because somebody exerts an unfair power of authority in telling somebody what you should or shouldn't do. And I think about, you know, people that want to go to university and go to college who have to have an admissions form signed. And somebody just says, you know, no, you're not smart enough without actually
testing the person. Yeah, right.
Yeah, and say, you aren't going to go to this school. You're going to go to this school, or you're going to go do this, or you're going to go do that. And it's just, it's not fair. And It hurt for many reasons, more than just myself. So I just wanted really the film to also let people know it's not okay, and we don't have to accept somebody's position, because a doctor is a power of authority, but we don't have to accept their position. We can find a different way. But it took a huge emotional toll. It was just a really difficult situation. But again, it was the first time in my life somebody took away my ability to actually move forward. And that was kind of a life-changing event in many ways, because it makes me really think about, am I doing anything that's preventing other people from doing something that maybe I'm not aware of? And it made me more self-aware of my own actions and words and the choices that I make for other people too.
Yeah. I think there's a difference between giving somebody a professional medical advice and then just saying it as he said it in a rude way. And it's like typical, like,
yeah,
judging a book by its cover. And I feel like by completing the swim, by breaking the record, you just proved not only him wrong, but all the other skepticals out there. And you definitely, in my opinion, kind of also just proved everybody wrong on like how a professional athlete has to look, because it's not just about the looks. And you did an awesome job, and I'm pretty sure there's more to come bigger goals. And I think you're a role model for many people. And I really hope he saw the movie, or that he realizes that he was
I do too. And I hope he remembers it, because I think I think you can be an athlete and you can be healthy and you can eat your pizza and your donuts too. I mean, you know, there's just so many different things people can do and be without looking a certain way. And that's another great thing. You know, I think Dan captured that moment really well, because I didn't think it overly dominated the film at all, but it was definitely a point of contention and conflict that really changed the trajectory of my swim. I mean, thank goodness I had a great relationship with my prior care team and my prior medical staff, to go back to them and say, I don't know what to do, I need help. And then also ask the question too, in your professional opinion, am I really unhealthy? You know, because I think it caused a lot of self-doubt for me too, because I thought, what if he's right? What if I am, you know, what if I am too unhealthy? Am I making smart choices? Am I really good enough? And that's really hard to ask yourself, are you good enough to do something? Because before I went, I thought I was. And then as soon as he was done talking to me, I thought, well, maybe I'm not. And that just goes to show the power and effect, you know, different words can have on people too. Because one person's word, one 20-minute visit changed my entire perspective on my confidence. And again, that's what I want to make sure that I choose my words more carefully when I'm talking to people too, because I never want something I say to make somebody else feel like they're not good enough for whatever they're doing.
I think that's, even though that was pretty hard for you, I mean, one, I hope you got your confidence 100% back after just finishing that swim. And I think with every bad there comes something good, and I feel like this is the good part about it, that you just like be more aware. And talking about confidence, I want to give a little outlook at what we can expect from you, because you are about to embark on another journey, Ars Mammut 2, and if I remember correctly, you had a shoulder surgery.
Yes.
And I was wondering, is there any doubt in your abilities at the moment? Are you back to 100%?
I do have doubt, and I'm not back to 100% yet. And I think that's where a lot of the doubt comes from, is I had shoulder surgery just over a year ago, and it's just so hard because you use your shoulder for lots of different things that I didn't really realize, from little things like I had to learn how to brush my teeth with my left hand because I couldn't, you know, you don't think about brushing your teeth, and, you know, obviously reaching and getting things, I couldn't do anything with my right arm for a bit. And this is a little more gross and personal, but like wiping yourself after you go to the bathroom, it's really difficult to do it with the opposite hand.
I can't imagine.
And so you had to relearn kind of all these things that I took for granted, how to apply makeup, how to, you know, do my hair. And once I finally got cleared to swim again, which was just in March of this year, it felt like I had to relearn swimming again. And I wasn't confident in my stroke because I had gained a little bit more weight from surgery, because I went from working out, you know, 5 to 6 days a week to zero overnight. And so when you take somebody that's super, super active and they have that metabolism built up, I was super hungry all the time because I had a high metabolism, but I wasn't doing anything to burn the food off. So I gained weight. I wasn't active. All that affected my body position in the water. And I'm better now, but I'm still slower, and I'm not, my stroke just isn't quite there yet. It's, I don't know. There's just something wonky about it that I haven't figured out yet. So all that is, you know, brings a lack of confidence. And that's where I really have to trust my coach and my coaching partners and my coaching team, in that they know me really, really well, and they know my body well, and they're monitoring my progress. And, you know, I still go back to my medical providers, not the bad one, but my good ones that I have now, my good medical team and my surgical team, to make sure that I'm progressing appropriately. But it's a lot slower. They told me this was going to happen too. They said, you're going to want to get back into it quicker, and you're going to have a point in time where you say, oh, I can't do it yet. That's where I'm at right now. So I'm getting frustrated because I want to do all these things, and I can't yet.
Yeah.
So that's building lack of confidence. I'll get there. Like, I have faith that I'm going to get there. I trust everybody that I'm working with that I'm going to get there. I need to get there because the goals that I have for Ice Mermaid 2 are pretty big, and I'm excited about swimming colder, further, longer, and seeing where I go with ice swimming.
So that would be the next question. If you can you let us know what the main topic, the main subject of Ice Mermaid 2 is going to be?
Yes. So I am exploring right now. We'll say exploring because, again, I'm scared too. That's a whole nother topic we could talk about because it's new territory. But I am looking at going after the female world distance record in ice swimming. And that's super, super scary for many reasons. Like, one, because I know I can't do it yet with my shoulder, but also just the lack of confidence where I'm at right now with training. Mm-hmm. It's also really cold, and that's really, really scary to think about adding that much time on to my swim in distance. So I'm scared about that. I'm trying to think about what are the potential health effects with regards to hypothermia at that level of cold exposure, how it's going to affect my life. Do I want to do that? Do I even want to risk that? Because I don't want to give up my life for sport.
Yeah.
You know, I have so much water and so many places to visit, and I have so many things I want to swim in, and so many experiences in the water that I want to experience. I don't want to give that up for something that in 10 years, like, nobody is going to remember except for me and the people that I did it with. I know there's so many different animals to see and different things. So there's a lot of things weighing in on it, but that's the swimming aspect. The bigger aspect.
One question real quick.
Yes.
What is the world record actually? So is it way further than 2.2 kilometers?
Yes, it's about, I would have to swim about 3.2.
It's not a cut.
It's further. And then I want to say the men's distance record, which I definitely don't want to go for it. I want to say that is 5 kilometers. So that's significant. Don't worry, I'm not doing that. I have no desire to do that. That's
too far. Ice Mermaid 3 coming in 2026.
I was going to say, I mean, you never know once you keep going. It all starts somewhere. So it would be about 3.2 kilometers that I'd have to swim. And it's a big, that's a big jump from 2.2.
Yeah.
But the aside from the swimming, the other theme for Ice Mermaid that I'm super excited about is the conservation aspect, because I think the first one really focused on a lot of great things. It was a really feel good movie. It had a lot of like really important social aspects to it with talking about body image and community. But the fact of the matter is I live in such a beautiful world in the water, and there's a lot of issues with regards to water quality and environmental impacts with, you know, global warming and sea temperatures rising. And sea temperatures rising because of global warming, that's a big issue, because if the water temperature rises, obviously that affects ice swimming. So there's going to be a heavier conservation aspect. And I've been working with a lot of different people in a lot of different fields to really start thinking about. The first question is global warming real? Because I think that's a very debatable topic depending on who you ask. There's a lot of people who believe it is real. There's a lot of people who don't. So really navigating kind of both sides of that equation. And then once a decision is made about global warming, how much of an impact does global warming have on the bodies of water that I'm swimming? What is causing, you know, warming of the environment? What is the downstream impact on things like water for animals where the fish come to spawn, that the orcas eat, you know, the food chain, as well as water for people, because it impacts, especially in remote communities, just human ability to get drinking water. So there's a lot of different things that we're kind of exploring and figuring out what's the right story conservation wise to tell, but then also what am I connected to most? Because I don't want to do something that I don't believe in. I want to be completely dedicated to a conservation topic. I think I picked one, so I'm really excited about it. But for me, it has to have an animal impact too, because I love the animals. So we're gonna just have a lot of really great things and some really good messages that I hope resonate with people as well.
I feel like even if I'm definitely connected to the water, and I reckon everybody that listens is probably too in some way or another, but if you address the fact of climate change, I think it doesn't really matter if you have a special connection to water, because I feel like it's going to affect us all at some point, if you believe it or not. And I think it's a beautiful thing to just be like, okay, last time we covered this topic and the other one, and now I make it so much bigger than just about me by, standing up for nature.
And I think this is great too, because we were talking, I was working with a team of glaciologists recently, and we were talking about climate change in general, and is it real, is it not real, how much science goes into it, how much theory goes into it, how much like emotions go into it, because theories and things can be perpetuated by emotions too. And even, it really comes down to, even if you have two people say, I believe in climate change and you don't, we're still going to have a really good conversation and debate about it. So the message still continues regardless of your position. And I think that's going to be really good for the film too, is, just like with the doctor, there's a lot of people that agree with the doctor, and that's okay too, but it starts conversation, and maybe through conversation it sparks an idea in somebody, and then that idea can take a bigger picture and have more impact.
100%, and I'm so looking forward to it. All right, Melissa, thanks a lot for sharing all the insights today. And as I said, I'm really looking forward to that movie. Before we come to an end, I have three final questions, okay, which I would ask you to answer in one sentence, if possible.
Ooh, one sentence. Okay. I can do it.
So, the first thing would be, could you please describe the feeling that the ice cold water gives you?
Joy. I don't even think I need a sentence for that one. It's joy and connection to nature.
That's perfect. Second, does swimming in ice cold water always feel the same?
No, it does not feel the same. It varies significantly between the body of water you swim in. It's always different.
Okay. And what is the greatest real risk when ice swimming?
Rewarming and getting through that hypothermia stage is the biggest risk. It's the most painful and it hurts every time.
All right. Thank you very much, Melissa. Thank you for being here on the show.
Thank you so much.
What a journey. What a journey. Thank you for listening to the conversation with Melissa. And thank you, Melissa, for being part of it. I feel certainly inspired. And as winter is approaching, I want to encourage you out there. Maybe try a cold shower. Or if you dare, visit your local lake and have a quick dip in it. And just see how your body feels, how it reacts. And maybe you can imagine how it must feel like to swim 2.2 kilometers in it. I certainly will skip the ice cold showers, but I'm gonna jump in the ice cold ocean and see where it will take me. We're definitely looking forward to all the up and coming projects that Melissa has planned. In the meantime, if you like this episode, please consider sharing it with a friend. Follow and rate the podcast wherever you listen to it and write us a comment. That really helps us moving forward. So I'll see you soon, either on one of our screenings of the International Ocean Film Tour or right in our happy place, the ocean. Until then, bye.